So we're over halfway on this retreat. We've had the best of possible facilities, beautiful rooms, nice en suites, great food, nice comfortable hall, the best teachers. So if you haven't got jhana yet, why not? What is the problem? Because I've given you some very clear and powerful, accurate teachings. But even so, there's the things we call hindrances, obstacles, problems to one's meditation. And even in the best situation, sometimes there are blockages. And I mentioned a few of those last night. And so today, before it's too late, while there is still time, I want you to tell you about the blockages in meditation and how to overcome them. This is basic understanding of meditation teachings. I know that sometimes that people, when they start teaching about obstacles, they just repeat the old stuff, the five hindrances. But I'm going to reshuffle those, to reorder them. Add a bit from this and a bit from that to give another angle on the obstacles to meditation. Because the way I was trained to think and to stop thinking means you can see things in different ways, interesting ways, to give another angle which solves the problems. Because I know there was a few questions over the last couple of evenings about thinking and stopping thinking, and about being intelligent. And I just remembered this morning in the shower the meaning of intelligence. It comes from a Latin word. Now, intelligence and intellectual comes from the word intellegere. I studied Latin at school. It's very close to Sanskrit and Pali. It literally means to read between. It's actually the legere even comes from the Pali Sanskrit, to likati. In Thai, leka, leka is secretary. That comes from likati, which literally means to scratch. Because to write in ancient days, you would scratch grooves in the palm leaves. And in those grooves, fill it with resin, and then sort of varnish it on the outside, and there you had your palm leaf manuscript. You literally scratched in the words. And from that scratching, Likati, he's not here today, but the young monk who comes in the afternoon, he's Saleka, means someone who scratches out the defilements. And from that we get intellegere, which means to write and to read. And from that intellegere, to read between. Now I always thought I was reading between the lines. But it's not just reading between the lines, it's reading between the words, even reading between the thoughts. And I'll give you an example now. Hate. 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 What happened between those words? Did you see the mind becoming very uncomfortable? And your mind was actually starting to experience where hate was pointing to. You were reading between the words. Peace. 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 What happened between those words? The mind felt totally different. It was moving to the place where those words were pointing. Again, you were reading between the words. That is intelligence. Not seeing the words, but seeing to where they're pointing. Not staying with the signpost, but looking to the direction. That old Buddhist, the finger pointing at the moon. The thoughts are the finger. The moon is the insight. So now you understand what we're talking about. Because you were trained to think and also to stop thinking, to see between those words. As a monk, training with someone like Ajahn Chah, who had this natural ability to see between things, he would always look and question and see things anew. He didn't really teach me what Buddhism was. He taught me, the theories, but taught you how to understand. A great teacher never teaches you facts, but teaches you how to find out. And that's the whole point here. Teaching you how to find out the Dhamma, not what to believe. So because I was trained that way, you did manage to see things which other people hadn't seen. And that's why many of the teachings you hear here, you find are original, are new. I tie them back into the suttas. They're real, they're legitimate, but expressed in a new way. And I hope each one of you will do that. It's one of my favorite sayings. You never stand in the shadow of a great teacher. You always stand on their shoulders, taking it further. Not just repeating what other people have said, but standing on their shoulders and seeing greater distances, more truth. So, when I started reading those suttas, I didn't just think about them, I just saw them. And one of the first things I saw was in places where most people just skim over, you stopped and saw great jewels of wisdom. And the first jewel of wisdom was in the old Four Noble Truths. Many people, yes, they focus on the first noble truth, and maybe even the second noble truth of craving, and the fourth noble truth of the Eightfold Path. But one of the most neglected parts of the Four Noble Truths is number three. Because all it says is ending craving is a way to nirvana. Yeah, you know, that's obviously, if craving is a cause of suffering, that's number two. Ending craving must be the end of suffering. But very few people look further and see that in that little short sentence, the Buddha also taught how to end craving. In these beautiful four ways of letting go, Chaga, Patinisaka, Muti, and Analia. Four little words which hundreds of monks chant every day, but because people think and they don't see, they miss. What a beautiful teaching that is. In one of the most central and well-known sutras of the Buddha, they miss the great teachings on how to let go, how to meditate, how to be free. So, Chaga. Chaga is called giving, generosity. And as soon as the monk starts talking about generosity, many people in Australia hide their wallets. He's asking us to give another donation. Oh, we've given enough donations. No, that's not what generosity means. Generosity, I'll tell you the two types of generosity. There are the people, not just the major generosity, you know, is like giving donations or giving things. There's some people who give a great donation. They may be for Jhana Grove, like many people gave a lot of money for this place. And there are some people, they want to donate the meditation hall. And afterwards, they want their name put on the meditation hall. Dania Percy Meditation Hall, donated by our great caretaker. Would that be generosity? In Buddhism, that's not generosity at all. We call that advertising, your ego. Dania Percy Meditation Hall. It's buying advertising rights for your ego. That's what it is. And so you see, in this meditation complex, there is not one name of any donor listed anywhere. All the donors are totally anonymous. In fact, I was very pleased, every now and again, the government does something legitimate, moral, and wise. Donations to the building fund are tax deductible. In other words, you can claim it against your tax. But if you give a donation and want your name put somewhere, it's not tax deductible. the ATO, the Australian Tax Office, does not recognise it as a donation. It is by advertising rights for yourself. Good on the Australian Tax Office to stop all that rubbish. So if you give, no one knows you've given. It's giving, expecting nothing back in return. And that expecting nothing back in return is the essence of generosity. I give a lot in my monastic life to everybody. Sometimes the monks complain that I don't take enough rest. You're always saying yes to these invitations, yes to more interviews, yes to more retreats. But some years ago, it was actually one of the first times I went to Singapore. And of course people take you around to see the sort of the city and the monasteries and the temples. I'm glad I got that out of the way many years ago so I don't have to do it again. So, you know, when you take you to a city, you've got to come and see this, you've got to come and see that. So, okay, get it out of the way. So, okay, I've done that. I don't have to waste my time doing it again. So, out of compassion, you allowed yourself to be taken around. And I remember going to the Sri Lankan temple in Singapore and being shown around by a very nice monk. And after being shown around, he asked me to sign the visitor's book. So I picked up the book and wrote my name and wrote the address, Bodhinyana Monastery Serpentine, and I looked in the next column and that's what I got a shock. It was, how much are you going to donate? And I realized I'd picked up the donation book, not the visitor's book. It was a mistake. But it was too late now. I'd already put my name and the address. And if I put nothing, that would have been really, really mean. You know, these monks, you know, they don't help anybody. So I had to think very quickly. And so what I did for my donation, I put my life. MYLIFE. So if you look in the donation book, what's the Sri Lankan temple in Singapore called? No, not the Sri Lankan Rama, no, it's one of the other ones. It's on one of the main roads somewhere. Anyway, they teach Pali there, I forget. Anyway, this was the main, one of the big ones there. See? Mangala Vihara, that's right, Mangala Vihara. If you look at the donation box over there, there's a donation from Ajahn Brahm. He's donated his life. And that's pretty accurate. Expecting nothing back in return. Now that is called giving. How does that translate into meditation? How it translates is you sit down here and you give your mindfulness, your attention to this moment as your act of generosity, expecting nothing back in return. That is called letting go. If you expect something, if you expect some peace, some nimittas, some jhanas, or enlightenment, that is not giving, is it? That's doing business again. I'm going to meditate as long as I get jhana. I'm going to meditate, at least I'll get nimitta. If I don't get nimitta, I'm going to ask for my money back. Ajahn Brahm said, you can ask for your donations back. If I don't get nimitta, Ajahn Brahm has deceived me. I'm going to... You don't give expecting things back in return. It's not giving then. It's not from the heart. Even if you help somebody and they don't say thank you, think, what am I doing this for? They don't even acknowledge my great gift to them. That means it wasn't a gift. It was another business deal. I'll help you as long as you acknowledge me. I will meditate as long as I get something out of this. Remember that first teaching I said? It's not about getting something. It's about being here. Dropping the arrow of craving. So this is the first lesson in letting go and overcoming the hindrances to meditation. Give all your energy, all your mind, all your attention to this moment, expecting nothing back in return. And if you can do that honestly, you'll get into really, really, really deep meditation very quickly. And then someone comes up at question time and they say, I did that, but it didn't work. What do you mean it didn't work? You wanted something out of it. I'm going to let go expecting nothing back in return, as long as I get John. You see how sneaky this mind can be. You have to be absolutely 100% giving, expecting nothing back. Which means if nothing happens, you've got exactly what you wanted. No complaints. That's the test. But it overcomes this expectation. Because even the word expectation, what does it mean? It's looking outside of this moment. In meditation, we don't expect, we inspect. We look inside this moment. We don't look to the next moment. That's what expectation is, isn't it? Losing your present moment awareness. So give, expecting nothing back in return. For the joy of giving your attention, your mind, your energy, your body to this moment, it becomes giving. A brilliant way of getting deep meditation and overcoming the hindrances. The next way is called Pati Nisaga, which literally means throwing things away. So in meditation, throwing things away means not how much more you can achieve or experience, not more achievements to add to your meditation CV. When you go back home and you talk to your friends, what retreats have you got? Yes, I've been on the Vipassana retreat where I've got this jhana. I've been on the Ajahn Brahm retreat, I've got that jhana, I've ticked that box. I've been on the Ajahn Sujata retreat where I learned metta. And I've done this. It's like all of these retreats and things which you gain with your meditation CV. You know, what retreats you've been on, or what experiences you had on this retreat, or what you gained on something else. That is the opposite of Pati Nisaga. That's accumulating things. Accumulating experiences and accumulating attainments. One of Ajahn Chah's famous teachings. And again, these are the ones which I say, you listen, you don't understand, but they get registered. And later on in your life, you realize, wow, that was some hell of a teacher. You one-liners, easy to understand. Not complicated at all. We meditate to let go, not to attain. Brilliant teaching. If you're meditating to attain something, even to attain peace, or just a moment when my mind is not thinking, if you're meditating to attain something even better, right? Nimittas. Or you've got second jhana, but you never got third jhana. This one, I'm going to go for third jhana. I'm going to attain third jhana. That is not the path. That is not letting go. That is meditating to attain things rather than to let go of things. So in meditation, we're not trying to get more things. You've got too much already to see how much you can let go of. How much can disappear. How much you can clear your desk. You know, your desk at the office, at work, or at home, it's got an inbox and an outbox. The inbox is stuff coming from the past. The outbox is stuff you're going to send off into the future. The first thing you clear off in your desk is the inbox and the outbox. You just sweep them off the table. So no future, no past. You don't possess those. You throw them away. Literally. And there's still many people who will not throw away their past. Even so much brainwashing I've done on this retreat so far. And still what somebody did to you years ago, what you did yesterday, what somebody did this morning, they woke you up at 3 o'clock in the morning. Just these smart addicts want to come here and get enlightened. They don't care about me. That, you know, I'm not enlightened. I'm not far from it. I need my beauty sleep. Whatever it was. That was 3 o'clock this morning, a long time ago. Who cares about it? It's gone. So you let go. See how many things you can throw away. On your desk is a telephone. Throw it away. That represents thinking, thinking, thinking. Hello, it's my family calling. Are you thinking about your family now? What's your husband up to? Now you've been away for 6 or 7 days now. Are you sure that he's behaving? Because you haven't checked up on him. What's he up to? What's your kids up to? How's the stock market going? My shares. Now maybe I should call just in case, because you know, if it goes down very quick and I don't sell or don't buy, I'm going to be in big financial problem. Maybe I should. That's a telephone of thinking calling you. So you just throw the telephone out. Unplug it. So thought can't even reach you. Same with the body, is like another telephone. Hey, it's the knees calling. Have you checked up on me yet? Why is it you let go of the body? It's nice and peaceful, then suddenly start thinking about your knees or your legs. It's just like they give a call. Hey, you're ignoring me, nose. Can you please rub me a little bit? So you let go of your body as well. Abandon it. How much time do you give to this body? I had to rest it last night. As soon as I got up, I had to go to the toilet. As soon as I finished the toilet, I had to take a drink. As soon as you take a drink, you have to get dressed. Oh, this body, it just... Why can't you just get up and just, who cares if you're naked or whatever you've got, just go meditate. Why do I always have to go to the toilet? I went to the toilet last night. Why do I have to go to the toilet now? You're so demanding, body. And always having to feed it. And that's why it's great to have one meal a day, because you stuff yourself with one meal. You don't have to worry about it the next, all the rest of the day. That's what you try to do, but you know, you got a bit sick and a bit, so you try at least 2 times a day. But just the burden of having put food in your mouth 3, 4, 5 times a day, some of you. All that washing up, all that eating, just what a waste of a time. Imagine if you could just get your breakfast, I don't know what you have for breakfast, some toast or some noodles. Get your lunch and rice and curry. Get your evening meal, maybe some pasta or something, and put it all together, mix it all up and just bung it in. Get it all over and done with. Wouldn't it be wonderful, just one day, then you'd be free for the rest of the day. But no, we like to fill up our life. So, Pachyanniska means seeing how much you can simplify, how much you can throw away, how much you can throw out. Because what you're doing is you're throwing out these attachments. And these attachments aren't something to cherish. They're just great burdens. Just like you're walking backwards and forwards with a backpack on. You know these big backpacks? I see these poor kids going to school. And they must get deformed after grade 6 or 7 because they've got these huge backpacks on their back, weighed down with all their books. And same as you. You're weighed down with all your worries and troubles, all your past and future, all your thinking, all your list of things to do, all your list of things to do. So much stuff. So how do you do that? You can't just do all the things on the list. My answer is be totally irresponsible. Just take off that backpack and throw it in the bin. The whole lot. With all those emails you haven't answered. Just delete it. Because what I learned is, well, if they've got good karma, the emails get sort of answered. If it doesn't get answered, if it gets deleted, it doesn't get through to me, that's just karma, that's all, nothing to do with me, so I don't take any responsibility. You just didn't have enough good karma to get your email answered. Delete, 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 delete. Hey, I don't know my emails today. That's meditation. And you know, the world doesn't stop when you delete all your emails. You don't get wrong. In fact, what happens is people give up sending emails anymore. It's even better. So you're free. Oh yeah, okay, you get sacked from work. You know, your husband sort of divorces you. But even that's pretty good news too. You have more peace in life. So anyway, see how much you can throw away. And especially, you know, all these thoughts and ideas. Throw them all away. Don't possess things. And any experience you have in meditation, don't take notes. This is interesting, I have to remember this. As soon as it happens, throw it away. Don't have any replays like they have on TV on the sport. That was interesting. Replay.
That was a nice part of the movie. Let's see it all over again. Replay. No, as soon as it's finished, it's gone. And let it go. Don't keep a thing. Ajahn Chah used to say, how heavy is a stick? This is what he used to say. Pick up a stick. How heavy is it? And before I answered, he throwed it away. He said, it's only heavy when you hold it. When it's off in the forest there, it's not heavy at all. Brilliant teaching. All your worries, all your concerns, all your problems, all the guilt of the past, all the fear of the future. Is that heavy? Oh, it's gone. Oh, it is. Only if you pick it up and hold it. Only then is it heavy. So this is Patinisaka, throwing it away. I've already told you about the toilet paper simile. If that hasn't worked yet, again, write your piece of your problems on another piece of paper. It can be any old paper. It doesn't have to be toilet paper this time. Read it and then tie it around a stick. Go and get a stick in the forest. Get a rubber band or some tape. So wrap it around there so it's tied to the stick. And go a place in the forest and throw it as far as you can into the forest. With all your worries and concerns, fears and past traumas. Throw it into the forest. Because in the writing down is acknowledgement, and in the throwing away is letting go. Psychologically it works. You manage to throw away all this past. You're putting away the backpack. You're just throwing away. And imagine you've been walking with a backpack for such a long time. Now you put it down. It's not you don't just walk freely. You dance. Wow, I'm so light. No burdens anymore. That's called Patinisaka. Letting go. It's not trying to attain more things or more experiences. That's like putting more rocks in your backpack. Take them out. You've got too many anyway. Be someone who's got no past, no future, no burdens. Totally empty, totally free. You're meditating not to attain things, but to let go of all this stuff you've been carrying around for years. That's the second part of letting go. And you find if you're trying to get something, you're holding on to things. That is why you can't get into deep meditation. You're carrying too many burdens. When I go to airports, you have to check in your luggage. It's usually, I know, Singapore Airlines, 23 kilos. Check in, 7 kilos in the cabin. You see many people who got more than that. And they say, no, 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 no. You cannot get on board with so much luggage. That's Singapore Airlines. In Buddha Airlines, they also have a weight limit. For checking baggage, it's 0 kilograms. And nothing is allowed on board either. If you want to check in on Buddha Airlines, direct flight to Nibbana, you aren't allowed any baggage at all. All bags, handbags, computers, the whole works have to be left behind before you can board. That's called Buddha Air to Nibbana. Do you want to go? You've all got tickets. But you might not be allowed on the flight if you carry too much baggage, which means any baggage at all. So you throw it out, let it go, and then you're so free. You're allowed to be irresponsible. I am an irresponsible abbot. You know, sometimes I don't know what's going on over there on the road. And I do go over there in the evening, but they don't tell me. And they're very well trained, so you know, you're not responsible at all. When I go to the Singapore, I haven't got a clue what's going on in the Buddhist society at all. So I'm totally irresponsible. Now, is it Angie? Am I director anymore of the Brahm Center? Or I don't know where I am anyway. I know that some time ago they made me director and they took me off as director. I don't know what role I have there, but I don't care because I'm not there at the moment. So I'm the irresponsible Ajahn Brahm. So have a really good time. You know, when I don't get involved, you know, it's amazing how well things go without me. It's amazing how well things go in your family when you're not there. You don't have to be there. Be responsible and things go better in life. So, that's throwing things away. And the next way of letting go is the favorite, the best one of all, especially for meditation. It's called mutti, freedom, otherwise known as the name of Dania's rabbit. She's got a rabbit called Mutti. It's locked up in her room all the time. It's not free at all, is it? Sorry about that. But what is freedom? A lot of times that people, they fight for freedom. I remember like the people in the army in the Second World War, we fought for your freedom. So what freedom? Do you really feel free? When do you feel free? You know, there's a lot of times I've been, because part of my role now is you go traveling around the world, and sometimes people try to look after me and they put me in these 5-star hotels. I remember going to this very plush hotel in somewhere in Japan once. I mean, it really was 5 or 6 stars. You know, I don't pay for it, of course. They just, you know, give me the room, here you are, and put me inside. And you know, I was in there for about 5 or 6 hours waiting for the next appointment. And there was a TV in there which I couldn't turn on, not allowed. There was a spa which I didn't know how to use anyway. And I was scared of going in and press the wrong button, you might get sucked off out somewhere. And there was a mini bar which I couldn't use either. And I was stuck in there, and I looked through the windows, a nice forest outside, but I wasn't allowed out. And I thought, my God, I'm in prison. And it felt like that. I felt, I'm in prison. You know, I'm a monk. You know, you like the forest, be able to go out walking and do whatever you like. And I was in prison. I realized I'm now in prison in a 6-star hotel room. And I realized that it doesn't matter just how comfortable it is or how austere it is. That doesn't make a prison at all. A prison is any place you don't want to be. That's a prison. Once you get that insight, it's brilliant. Freedom is any place you want to be. Even if you're in jail. There's this monk, this very well-known Thai monk, you know, about 30 years ago. He was a really nice monk, very well-educated, very sort of spiritual. And he was going up the hierarchies, because he's a very honest, good monk, but also a very good administrator. So he's going up the hierarchy, and he was in line to be the Sangharaja of Thailand, the head monk of Thailand. And what happened, whenever you get into sort of the hierarchies, there's always politics. There's always somebody, stupid person, who wants to be what you're going to be. So one of the monks underneath him decided to get this guy out of the way, so that he could become the Sangharaja of Thailand. So what he did, this monk, you know, just like me, he gave lots and lots and lots of talks. If you really wanted to, you can get all of my talks, and you can actually get little phrases here and there, and you can prove anything. You know, I'm sure that you could get enough phrases for what I've said to prove that Ajahn Brahm is a Christian. You know, it's just no cut and paste. You know, just, and that's what they did. But this, they proved that he was a communist at the time when there was this big communist scare in many countries of the world. And it was actually against the law. And they sent him to trial for being a communist and convicted him and put him in jail. So this monk was put in jail just, you know, because all his talks, you know, they interpreted this word and that word mostly out of context and proved he was a communist. So he went to jail for 2 or 3 years. But what happened? It's interesting, you know, psychic powers and weird stuff and karma. The guy who wanted him out of the way, yeah, he was promoted to be the head monk of Thailand. And one day he was going in a convoy of cars, because these are VIPs, you have the police escorts and everything, to the old airport in Don Mueang. He was in the middle car, police cars ahead and behind. And a car coming the opposite direction lost control and slammed into that middle car where the Sangharaja was, just where he was sitting, and killed him instantly. No one else was hurt. Just this one monk. And for Thais, something like that happens. A car accident, only one person gets injured and totally killed. There must be something weird going on there. that must be karma. So that's when they started looking, what has this guy done? And of course, one of the most prominent things he did was to make sure this other monk went to jail. So they reviewed the case, and it was obvious it was a setup. So they released this monk. And they were so sorry, they put a monk in jail for 2 or 3 years. And the monk said, what do you mean sorry? This was the best time of my life. 2 or 3 years I had wonderful meditation. People would give me little food. I was like in a cell. It was like being in a cave in the forest again. No one was asking me any of these stupid questions or asking about their marriage or their children. And I didn't have to make holy water or do all this chanting all the time. I just sat there, had my meal, did a bit of study and just meditated. Oh, it was the best time of my life, he said, being in jail. And that's what he said. He wrote a book about it. It's a great little story. Now he was free. In fact, he felt more free in the prison cell than he did in the monastery, having to attend to all these people all day. So what is freedom? Freedom is wanting to be here. It has nothing to do with your external situation. What does that mean with meditation? Do you feel free right now? Or do you want to be somewhere else? If you want to be somewhere else, you're in prison. If you're thinking, how many more minutes? When is this talk going to end? Then this room is a prison for you. And I say this in life. If you're in a relationship, your husband, wife, whatever, and you don't like it, you want to be somewhere else, then your relationship is a prison. It feels like a prison. If you're in a job you hate, going to work is like going to prison. If you're in a body which is old and sick and hurting, I don't want to be here, I want some medicine to take this ache and pain away, then your body is a prison for you. Any place you don't want to be is called a prison. If you're in a meditation, I'm restless again, I don't want to be restless, I want to be in that jhana which Ajahn Brahm talks about, then you're in prison. You've just made a prison for yourself. How do you escape from the prisons? You don't have to change the situation around you. A monk, that monk could be free inside jail. And me, stupid Ajahn Brahm, could be in prison in a 6-star hotel room. It has nothing to do with your outside situation. Everything to do by, are you content? Are you happy to be here? If you have a partner, they may not be the best, but they're not the worst. If you think they're the worst, come and see me. I've got some amazing tales of really bad partners. I will tell you that, and you go home and say, oh, I'm so happy to live with you. After what I heard from Ajahn Brahm, I never realized. I'm so lucky. Very good. Thank you so much, Barbara. Can we record her laugh so we can... I want to play that again and again. It's really great. So when you're happy with your partner, yeah, not the best, but they're good enough. As I keep on saying, if you try and change your partner, swap them, you will find what I've discovered by talking to so many people. If you swap your husband and get another one, exactly the same. Because all husbands are the same. You don't get a better model afterwards. You can't upgrade or downgrade. All the same. Same with wires. You know, the chassis may be different, but the motor's the same. So the one you've got is good enough. Which means you feel free, you're content with the one you've got. Your job, yeah, it's tough, but it's good enough. If it wasn't tough, they wouldn't need to pay you. So it's good enough. Be content. It's just like going to work. That's what you have to do. And your own body, it aches, but it's good enough. And your meditation. Yeah, my mind's been all over the place, but it's good enough. I'm content with my stupid mind. I'm happy to be here. And if you're happy to be here and you don't want to be anywhere else, Schlossentorfer. Oh, it's so nice to have Schlossentorfer. I don't need to get excited with Nimitus. I don't need to get all blissed out and just have to dance all over the place afterwards. I've got this beautiful Schlossentorfer. I don't have to get great insights and have to figure out what the hell they mean afterwards. I'm Schlossentorfer. Oh, this is so nice. Be content to be there. Oh, my mind's restless all over the place. Yeah, that's what minds do. So I'm thinking, yeah, I'm content. Come on, mind. See what weird thought we can have next. Be content to be here. Because with contentment, just happy to be here, when you don't want to go anywhere else, you don't go anywhere else. You stay here. Because you want to be here. And the Schlossentorfer just lifts. The restlessness stops. The unpleasantness becomes very pleasant. You're just sitting here not wanting a thing in the whole world. My goodness, you soon get still. You go in. The mind stops because you don't want to do anything. You're happy where you are. And in monastic life, you learn to be content with anything. Literally anything. And after a while, you realize that's the path to meditate. Just to be content to be here. That's all. Whatever this happens to be. That's called stopping. Letting go. And you get the great meditations. Sometimes that's the obstacle which comes up. I mentioned this yesterday. You get so far. All you guys and girls have had nimittas so far. You get really close. Yeah, this is it. Here it comes again. Yes, yes, yes. Come on. You're not content. You want more. Now, there's some people here who give their right arm to get a nimitta. Been meditating for years, haven't got one yet. And you've got lots. And what do you want? I want more. I want jhana. Some of you got jhana. Only got first jhana. Oh, I want second jhana. Come on, second jhana. Please, please, please. How much do you want? You got first jhana. It's like Bill Gates. He's got 10 billion. He wants another 10 billion. Where is there an end to wanting? There's an end to wanting right here. By being content. The richest people in the world are people who want for nothing. So that's what you want. I want for nothing. This is good enough for me. So in order to really make that bite, you can do one of the mantras which I haven't said yet, which is one of the most powerful, leaving it for this time in the retreat. Good enough. This is good enough. Wherever you are on this retreat, however you feel, if you're sick and dying, if you're going psychotic, if your mind is all over the place and you're about to explode and get taken to the funny farm, just tell yourself, this is good enough. Thank you. At least there's one person who understands my great wisdom. Because once you say good enough, it stops all the craving. The food, this is good enough. The weather, this is good enough. Your bed, this is good enough. The talk, this is good enough. Your meditation, this is good enough. It stops the mind. And that's where you get progress. Or not progress, I call it ingress. You go in, to go deeper. And the last ways of letting go, annalia. That is the Teflon mind, non-stick. Alia is the place where things settle. Like the Himalaya is the place where the snow settles. Meghalaya in India is a place where the clouds settle. It's a place where things settle. Analia is having no place where it settles at all. I used to call it the Teflon mind, but these days I call it like the lotus leaf mind. People can pee on a lotus leaf. They can shit on a lotus leaf. They can vomit on it. Or they can pour Chanel No. 5 on the lotus leaf. It all runs off and leaves no residue. Because nothing sticks to the lotus leaf. You have a mind like a lotus leaf. Someone calls you an idiot, the most stupid meditator ever to come to Jhana Grove in the 3 years it's been open. In fact, the most stupid meditator since the time of the Buddha. I'm not talking about this Buddha. I'm talking the Buddha seven lifetimes ago. And it doesn't stick to you. And someone says, wow, I am so honored to have you sitting on my meditation retreat. To have someone who's so wise and so deeply meditative like you. Oh, it's an honor for Ajahn Brahm to be able to teach someone like you. I shouldn't be teaching you. You should be up here teaching me. You great, wonderful meditator. Just like a lotus leaf, it just all disappears. It runs off. Nothing sticks. So those are the four ways of letting go, the brilliant teachings. Giving, expecting nothing back in return. Being able to throw things away. Your meditator to let go, not to attain. See how much you can let go. See how much you can let go in this retreat center. So you take back home less than you brought. See if you can be free. Just being happy to be here. Some of the best moments in my life, in all sorts of areas. I just don't want to be anywhere else. I'm just happy just to be right here. There's no other place I'd rather be. There's no other people I'd rather be with than you. There's no other time I'd like to live except now. Isn't that happy? You can do that at any time, at any moment of your life. It's called freedom. Happy to be here. And lastly, having a non-stick mind. That was what I saw in the Second Noble Truth. Opened up the path of meditation. The real Dhamma of the Buddha. Not trying to attain things. Letting go of things. Not trying to get somewhere, but being happy to be wherever you are. Ending craving, the path to peace, incredible peace. So what does that mean to actually what you do? Still people say, well, how can I do this letting go? You don't do letting go, you let go of doing. That's the problem. Okay, very good teachings this morning. Okay, I've got to be content. Come on, I'll be content. I'm not content yet. Come on, let's be content. You can see what happens. You do contentment. You do letting go. You know, you do freedom. And that's not freedom at all. In order to make that very clear, when you got to the fourth noble truth, the path. Now there are some things about the Eightfold Path which people focus on. As I said earlier, mindfulness, the seventh factor. That's so put way up there that people forget about all the other stuff in the Eightfold Path. You got me saying stillness, samadhi is really, really important. So it's a battle between seventh and eighth, which is the most important, mindfulness or samadhi. And I say neither are important. The most important factor of the Eightfold Path, the one which is most neglected, is number two. Do you know what number two is? Right intention. Samasankappa. Do you know what that means? There are three samasankappas according to the Buddha. Nekamasankappa, Avayapadasankappa, and Ahimsakasankappa. And if you want to know their meaning, look on the back of one of the meditators sitting here. You got the Jhana Grove t-shirt? Can you stand up, please? Stand up, please. Take the thing off. Stand up. That's on the back. Please turn around so I can see. That is Nekamasankappa, Avayapadasankappa, and Ahimsakasankappa. That's why it's on the back of a t-shirt. It's the second factor of the Eightfold Path. Your right intention, what moves your mind, or the way your mind moves, to make sure whatever, you're making peace, you're being kind, you're being gentle. If you understand that, that is how to meditate. Simple as that. Stillness, mindfulness, that's what happens. That's the result of making peace, being kind, being gentle. All the hindrances disappearing, no sloth and torpor, no restlessness, no ill will, no desire. That's what happens when you make peace, when you're kind, when you're gentle. Jhanas, that's what occurs when you make peace, when you're kind, when you're gentle. Enlightenment, that's the natural result of making peace, being kind, and being gentle. Mindfulness, insight, stillness, these are the results. They're not the cause. The cause, the intention, that is making peace, being kind, being gentle. Can you get jhanas? Some of you can, some can't on this retreat. Can you get insight? Some can, some can't. Can you sit for 6 hours? Some you can, some of you can't. But all of you can make peace. Every one of you can be kind. Every one of you can be gentle. That's why each one of you can meditate. That's all meditation is. It doesn't matter what the object of your mind is. Whether it's sloth and torpor. It's restlessness. Wow, all these fantasies going on in my head. Wow, this is a really good fantasy. I never had this one before. Or whether it's, wow, look at this light in my mind. Ooh, it's empty. That is not important. What's important is you're making peace. There's just an old jhana again. Here we go again. Yeah, hi guys, seen you before. Be cool. Being peaceful, being kind, being gentle. That is the reason why you get deep meditation. If you're not making peace, but struggling with things. You know that they have these wars in the world? For making peace, you have ceasefires. Can't you have a ceasefire with your mind? You know, you're trying to sort of shoot your defilements. It's often talk of bang. Anger, bang. Think about the past, bang. That is not peace, that's war. So don't make war with your mind. Make peace, even if it's a crazy mind. Sometimes your mind is so crazy. Just the last little simile. One of my books, you know, the Opening the Door of Your Heart book, when it goes and gets translated into many different languages, it always usually has a different title. And sometimes there's some stories in that book which don't culturally fit certain places. Like, you know, when it was translated into Hebrew for the Israeli edition, the little story about, you know, involvement and commitment, bacon and eggs, which many of you know, I told at your wedding, because it mentions bacons and pigs, it wasn't allowable in Israel, so I had to find another story for the Israeli edition. I couldn't have the bacon and eggs simile. And the same in Korea. I think, I forget what story they didn't like, but I had to put the other story. And this is a story about the great elephant. And that's actually in the cover. It's the title of the Korean edition of Opening the Door of Your Heart. I forget, it's something to do with the elephant. They've got a big elephant on the cover. And it's a simile which I use from the story of the Buddha when you really go crazy on a meditation retreat. Because years ago, somebody came up to me, and, you know, fifth or sixth day, about this time, this is when it usually happens, say all those hindrances, the whole five, and few the Buddha never taught about, they're all at me right now. It's the attack of all the hindrances. Now, even when I thought about it, look, how can you have sloth and torpor and restlessness at the same time? Now, how can you have wanting and ill will at the same time? You just can't. But anyway, that's what it feels like. Everything is going at you. You're totally crazy, nothing's working, you're going out of your skull. What happens? And that's when I told them the Nalagiri strategy. How to overcome Those times in meditation when it all goes wrong, I mean really goes wrong. You're going crazy, you're going mad, nothing is working, and you're really going out of your head. And the Nalagiri strategy comes from the story in the time of the Buddha. Nalagiri was this big elephant, usually very placid, but Devadatta, trying to kill the Buddha, just fed the elephant with alcohol. Got the elephant really drunk. Until, just like the kids in Northbridge in Perth, once they get drunk, they just really go out of their skulls. And so this elephant went out of his skull, and he's got a big skull to go out of. He really went crazy and mad. And they let him loose down the streets. Now these were those narrow streets, like, if you see some of the old streets, say in these old cities like London or Paris, they're very, very narrow. And that was the streets like in India in those times, in Rajagaha. And so they let this elephant down this narrow street, charging like mad, smashing everything in its way. And who was coming in the opposite direction? It's why they let this elephant loose. It was the Buddha walking mindfully on his arms round, followed by all the monks. And all these people were running after, get out of the way, get out of the way, there's a mad elephant coming, get out of the way, jump for your lives. And the Buddha was walking mindfully towards the elephant. It was like the high noon, the elephant and the Buddha. Who would win? Right on cue, Barbara. And monks are supposed to be peaceful. But all the monks following the Buddha, elephants coming, elephants coming. They ran away, they jumped over the walls, they climbed the trees, they went through the doors. They all ran away. So much for great monks. But the one which was left was Ananda. Ananda was so devoted to his teacher, the Buddha. And he realized this mad elephant was coming. And there was no longer any escape. The two would meet. Ananda stepped in front of the Buddha. Let the elephant kill me. I will protect my master. I will give my life for my teacher. That's how much respect and love Ananda had for the Buddha. And I usually ask, if that was happening to me, how many of you would run up the trees and jump over the wall? But the Buddha said something like, very, very nice, Ananda, very cute, get out of the way, I can handle this myself. I really felt sorry for poor Ananda, because his great moment of sacrificing himself for his teacher, he just rejected, get out of the way. It's really a downer. So then, once the prologue was over, there it was. This crazy elephant, huge, smashing things all over the place. And the calm and peaceful Buddha, who would win? And more importantly, how would they win? Now the Buddha had great psychic powers. Psychic powers exist. Seen them. Maybe you haven't seen them, but I'm a monk and you've been around a long time. And of course this was a Buddha. Had huge powers. Even though this is not said in the sutras or the commentaries, I am sure, positive, if the Buddha had wanted to, just like a martial artist, he could have grabbed the elephant's trunk before the elephant knew what was happening. Twirled him 3 times around his head and thrown him 300 miles away over the Ganges. That'd be like nothing to a Buddha. That's how powerful they are. But would a Buddha use aggression or violence in front of a mad, crazy elephant about to kill him? No. What the story says, what happened, is something like this. The Buddha looked at that elephant coming to kill him and said something like, elephant, you can pick me up with your trunk if you like and smash me against the wall. If you want, you can trample me underfoot. Whatever you do, the door of my heart will always be open to you. Do whatever you want. I forgive you. Unconditional loving kindness, compassion, whatever you want to do, just do it. I love you. That purity, 100% unconditional. You can kill me if you want. That is incredibly powerful. Within a few seconds, the elephant had stopped in front of the Buddha. There were probably skid marks on the road. No, that's not in the sutras, I added that. Was standing in front of the Buddha, and the Buddha was stroking the elephant's trunk. There, elephant's okay. Shh, you're okay. I call that the Nalagiri strategy, when you really go crazy in your meditation. Because that's what it's like. This mind of yours is destroying everything, smashing to bits everything. And what do? If you give even the slightest bit of aggression, the mind will kill you, will send you crazy. Instead you say, mind, you can send me round the twist, you can send me up the wall, you can send me into craziness, destroy all my happiness, but mind, I will always love you. Mind, the door of my heart is open to you, no matter what you ever do. Just do it. If you give your mind unconditional loving kindness, mind, whatever you do is fine. Just like my father said to me, son, whatever you do in your life, the door of my house, my heart will always be open to you. Say that to your mind. Mind, whatever you do, the door of my heart will always be open to you. That's unconditional love. And in a few seconds, your mind will be bowing in front of you. You're just striking it there, mind. It's all right. And you and your mind will be at peace and friends. I call that the Nalagiri strategy. And incredibly powerful. So any time on this retreat you're going crazy, any time it's not working, you don't know what to do, you can't sit, you can't walk, you can't sleep, you've had enough cups of tea to last you a lifetime. What should I do? Mind, the door of my heart, send me crazy. I love you, mind, whatever you do. Unconditional acceptance. And your mind, in a few seconds, will be bowing before you, totally peaceful. Don't forget to stroke your mind. There, mind. Okay. I always loved you. You're okay. That's how you tame your mind. The more crazy, the more it works. So those are the strategies for overcoming the problems in meditation. Straight from the sutras. Not invented by Ajahn Brahm, but seen, explained, elaborated, and packaged for your convenience.